As the voice of Chicago innovation, each week we look for innovators that have set out to reshape entire industries. Ravin Gandhi is CEO and co-founder of GMM Nonstick Coatings, one of the world's largest suppliers of nonstick coating to a $9 billion houseware industry. I'm Scott Catoon, and it's time to start talking about tomorrow's business today. Ravin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So normally, I mean, we've had a couple manufacturers on, which is not the most entertaining topic sometimes. Coating is going to be a whole new level for us now. I've never gotten so...
The depth, the pain, the banality.
I want to understand the pain points of this industry quite literally. I'm going to talk about coating today. no, but seriously, I'm not making jokes out of it, but... What people don't realize about coating is that every single day, every person who gets up and uses their George Foreman grill, every single person who uses their, these tools. I don't cook very much, as you might be able to tell. basically, anything with Teflon, right? Anything that is...
Cookware, bakeware, and small electric appliances.
Okay, so things that I've never used in my whole life, but those who do use them, they use your product every day.
I mean, there are 40 million Americans who every single day use GMM nonstick coatings, which, I mean, that's a big number.
That's a huge number.
So it's, you know, we've
Except for me, because I don't cook or clean or any of that, but
well,
yeah.
You know, hopefully if you have a significant other who
I
might,
don't.
Or you, you know, so I can't help you.
I'll find one.
Well, let's talk about coatings, because otherwise I'm just going to get, you know, wildly distracted. But yes, what I would say is walk down the aisle of a Target, a Walmart, or a Bed Bath & Beyond, and look at those expensive pieces of cookware. They might cost $50, $60, $100. There might be 30 cents of coating on that pan. But would you buy that pan if it didn't have that coating on it?
No.
Of course not. So what we like to say is we are the face. We are the consumer-facing face of the housewares industry.
Well, and that's kind of what brought you to the show here, is that as a segment on industry innovators, what I thought was most innovative about what you're doing is the fact that you allow the brand, whether it's, you know, George Foreman Grill or, you know, whoever it is, you let that to be this, to stand out in front. And essentially your brand is your product. Your performance is your brand. The brand doesn't matter to the people who are buying it. The brand matters to the George Foreman Grill owners who are making the grill and saying, we only go with GMM.
Well, absolutely. If you look at our list of clients, it's pretty much the who's who of famous brand names in America. People like Calphalon and KitchenAid and Farberware and George Foreman and Oster and Crock-Pot and Wilton and World Kitchen. It goes...
That's what I meant to say a few minutes ago.
Yes, right. Of course. So people like that. And what we decided was... Why continue to fight the fight in the same way that the people in this industry had fought it for 20 or 30 years, which means me going to that laundry list of clients saying, hey, use the GMM name because the GMM name really means something to consumers. We made, I think, as you're saying, the innovative choice to say that you guys have these multi-billion dollar brands. When it comes to nonstick coatings, we believe the best brand name is your own.
Yeah.
And let us be an invisible component that enhances your technology. Why? Because it's going to help you drive sales. And when you are the purchasing manager of one of these multi-billion dollar entities and you see that I'm a vendor that helps you drive sales, you can bet that I'm going to keep getting those POs.
That's the part that's interesting to me because I think it's actually kind of a, I mean, maybe not. I don't know your industry well enough to say this, I guess, but in the manufacturing space, a lot of times you see them spending millions of dollars on their branding and other recognition and trying to differentiate between, you know, we make transformers, we make this, we're the components. And it just never made sense to me why they wasted so much money even trying to brand it out. Make good relationships and make a product that's unbelievable that your end client and their end user cannot do without.
Without a doubt. You know, so there's probably three big reasons why people buy from my company. The one we just talked about, which is the branding innovation. But the second thing is product innovation. You know, why do people use nonstick coatings? What's the pain point? Food sticks or food stains. And there's so many problems out there. Look at any cooking show in the world with Emeril or Rachel Ray. And they're sitting here saying, oh, well, look at my great coating here. You know, it works really well. So we have 30 R&D people who are obsessed 24/7 innovating and making the lives of those 40 million people who use my product every day better.
Yeah.
You know, and so we see it as a big job. And in the end, if I go to my clients and say, look, guys, we've made a coating that causes your pan to heat up faster or the egg to cook better or to release easier, we don't need to worry about the market. That product sells itself. So it would make absolutely no sense for me to take out a Super Bowl ad and say, oh, the GMM coating, you know, is the only coating. That's what one of my big competitors did, Teflon.
Yes.
And Teflon used to be owned
DuPont.
DuPont.
So 1945. 1938.
I love DuPont. They're a great company.
Yep.
And they spun off Teflon last summer to a giant corporation called Chemours. So now it's Teflon by Chemours. And there's going to be an interesting, you know, situation in the market to see, will their sales persist when it's Teflon owned by Chemours? Because most people know DuPont.
Sure.
Did you know the name Chemours?
I've never heard of it.
Okay, so that is going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah, I would say so. And but yeah, I mean, we can go on all day on that. It's just, it's a fundamental difference in how you market this. And I stand by you in this one, that making a product that is just the best and not, don't worry, who cares?
We do a lot of focus grouping and a lot of research. And we saw this study that was done where it said, which are the most famous American brands that have kind of been turned into nouns and verbs? And these are things like Xerox and Kleenex and Frisbee and Escalator. And I didn't even realize, Scotch tape, Teflon was on that list,
yep.
You know, and sometimes when you become so successful because your product is so good, it ends up being a problem. You know, if you're Google, it's still okay. You can use the word, you know, we Google something, but Google doesn't really have any competition yet.
Yeah.
Whereas on the Teflon
side. What about Bing? I thought Bing was all over it.
Yes.
I thought that was
right. You know,
right on their back.
If I ever choose to get out of, you know, sell my company, I'm going to try to buy Bing from Bill Gates and see if he'll sell it to me.
There is actually value to Bing. It's just not the value that people.
I'm being facetious.
No, of course.
The point is that I think that capitalism is hard,
yeah.
Right? I mean, if you look at the average age of a S&P 500 stock, it might be your 20 or 30 years. These multi-billion dollar corporations, they go out of business or they get acquired because staying in business is hard. And there's a very good saying, which is when, and this is great for innovation, when the speed of change of outside of your industry is greater than the speed of change within your company, you're in trouble.
Oh, and, yeah. It's a great quote.
Right. And Jack Welch said that at GE,
yep.
Because this is what we drive constantly at GMM. We have 250 employees. And what I preach all the time is just because things are going great, don't rest on your laurels. Keep innovating, because that is what we're going to be talking about in 2017, 18, and 19.
Oh, for
and
sure.
A lot of my customers, are multi-billion dollar American corporations. These are people who are smart enough. Their sourcing people are smart enough. They don't want to know just what you're doing today. They want to know, well, by the way, GMM, what are you going to be giving us in 2018 and 19? And if I don't have an innovation story, I'm out of luck.
I've been telling businesses this for the last 3.5 years, and I was at Northwestern. I know you went to Kellogg.
Yep.
So we got Go Cats going on in here.
Yep. Class of 2000, Kellogg, big supporters.
There you go. Yeah, it's a great school. I took numerous classes there, so a big fan of Northwestern and Kellogg. But you have been in coding for basically your whole life, right?
I mean, besides a 5-year exodus before, when I sold one business and I had a 5-year non-compete, so I was completely out of it. And in 2007, I started GMM.
What did you do in the 5 years?
I became kind
of a private
equity guy, actually. I ended up, that would be great, traveling.
Just traveling.
5 years, right. No.
It's like Batman.
Right.
Just sort of.
Yes, I became a superhero that just was unsuccessful. Basically.
Unheralded, not unsuccessful. Unheralded.
See, this is why I'm not on the radio, because I can't come up with these quips unheralded so quick. I love that. So what I did during those 5 years is I very much got into the stock markets, and I invested and did some private deals in the pharmaceutical industry, in small manufacturers. But I realized that my passion really was building something from the ground. So when my non-compete ended in 2007, I found a business partner, a guy who I'd worked with before in Asia, and we started GMM, from nothing.
So you said you were doing a little bit of trading and investing. So you do a little bit of VC investing going on in Chicago and elsewhere too, right? So
yes. I probably spend 80% of my time running GMM. I am, the CEO. But I've got a great staff. So I've got a lot of people who handle things. So I spend about 20% of my time doing angel investments. And what I have found is that when you're a guy like me, even though you're a successful entrepreneur, I can't go to Sequoia or Kleiner Perkins and say, hey, by the way, can I throw my money into your deal?
Sure.
It's very hard. They don't know who I am. So what I chose to do is I said, let me go to the best business schools like Northwestern, schools like Columbia, and I mentor in those schools. And I actually try to find students that, in my judgment, are really nascent, great entrepreneurs,
sure.
And I will fund their business ideas. A deal that was just done in Chicago, which got some press, it's called Kimi, and it's a company that does, it's a digital solution for the locksmith industry. So I found this deal in 2012. The CEO, Greg Marsh, was a student at Columbia. And through a mentorship program, I met him. And he was so smart, and I loved what he was doing so much. I said, if you drop out of school, I will fund this company. And he literally dropped out of school as a first year at Columbia. And it was funny because I didn't have to convince him. The second I said,
he was looking for it.
He said, by the way, I'm not going to class anymore. He was going to drop out whether or not I funded or not, but I ended up funding it. And we've now raised over $30 million from venture capitalists. So this is a business for Chicago people. It's in 7-Elevens and Bed Bath & Beyonds. There's a kiosk. It looks like a phone booth. Yep. When you go in there, it'll copy your house key, but even those big, ugly car keys in the kiosk. And the coolest part about it is it does it digitally. So once you copy your key at Keymi,
got you.
It's in the cloud. Yep. So you can access it from an iPhone app, an Android app, or the kiosk. So what we're really doing is not disaggregating the key duplication market. We're disaggregating the $7 billion locksmith industry. So,
it's brilliant.
Right. I have an office and I live down here in the John Hancock building. If I get locked out, I can either pay my building $100 to open my door, or I can pay a locksmith $300 to break my door down, or I can walk to the Keymi kiosk at Chicago and Wabash and for $20 get my key. So we found the demand to be off the charts. That's why we've attracted this much money.
So that's fantastic. I mean, we ought to talk offline because we have so many different ventures that come through here, so many different ventures that I'm working on myself. I mean, it's an interesting... I guess you're just sort of that entrepreneur true at heart, right? I mean, just opportunist is written all over it.
I love looking at the world and saying, where are problems that I can solve? Because in the end, what really is the oxygen, I think, not only for entrepreneurs, but for successful businesses, is solving problems. And if you don't have a big problem that you're solving in your business, you know, you've kind of already lost the battle. A lot of times I look at deals, I get pitched all the time I judge business plans at Kellogg.
Yep.
And a lot of times I tell the groups of students, are you really solving a problem or is this kind of an inconvenience?
Yeah.
Because inconveniences don't make millions of dollars.
Sure.
Problems. It's really hard to make money, to have consumers pay you for a service to the level where you can actually make money, unless it's a ugly
problem. It's got to be a real
problem.
And we hear that all the time. All of our accelerator things that we've worked on, all the innovation workshops, everything, it always comes back to, is it an itch or is it actually like, you know, an injury? And that's,
right.
You know, it's a big thing because most everyone, empathy is a very difficult thing for people to understand. They think for themselves, like I'm doing this one thing and it's annoying to me. This is a pain in the butt. I want to solve this problem, but it's really only a problem to you. And it's an insignificant thing to like 99% of the other people. You're wasting your time and your money trying to solve that problem because it's there's no market unless it's a premium service or something that you have like very niche with a lot of money.
I have a saying I like to use. It's kind of a strange metaphor. A lot of people think that they're solving a pain point. My question is it Tylenol pain or is it morphine pain?
Yeah.
And you need to be solving morphine pain because plenty of people can take Tylenol, but when your pain's bad enough that you need morphine, you will pay me to solve that, and that's my business.
I'm going
to
steal that analogy, so thanks for that.
Hey.
So you kind of alluded to it. After GMM, there might be a next for you. What do you think the next thing? What are you looking for?
I just want to make it clear. I love GMM. It's my primary
I don't mean
motivation.
To imply that you're leaving GMM. That is not what I'm saying.
Well, I'm the founder and CEO.
You can stay there forever.
Right.
What is something you're looking to get into now? And I don't mean just investing in something. But what's the next thing?
I'm 42 years old and I'm married with two young boys. So I've got a phenomenal home life. And that actually has impacted to some extent, my ambition. It hasn't reduced it, but it's kind of augmented it. And what I mean by that is, you know, this is probably the third business I've done now,
yeah.
You know, grown, and we'll see what happens to GMM in the future. I think it's going to, you know, continue to grow. But as you get older, you start thinking about, ways to help the world, you know. So I've started to do more nonprofit stuff in Chicago. I just joined the board of City Year, which is a education nonprofit that sends people into the worst underperforming CPS schools in the city, and it's just a phenomenal organization. The Ripples of Hope dinner is February 25th, I think. So if anyone wants to get into City Year, come to that dinner. It's a fantastic organization. Someday, you know, when I'm in my 50s, could I see myself doing something in public service? Maybe. You know, I mean, I don't know. But I definitely see that just because I know how to solve problems from a business perspective, you know, I think that those things could be used in other areas that could help society writ large. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just, I guess, you know, answering this question off the top of my head, but, you know, the sky's the limit.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Ravine, for joining us today. where can somebody come out to find? They don't necessarily have to look up GMM, but where can they find GMM, find out more about you, and read more of your articles? I was going to get to the 12 steps, but we ran out of time. Where can people read and follow you? Because you're an insightful guy. You write a lot of places. You share a lot of information. Where do they find you?
If you Google my name, Ravine Gandhi, there a lot of stuff will come up. You know, I'm a contributor at Inc. and Entrepreneur, and I do CNBC and Forbes and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of stuff out there. In terms of GMM, the product is, it's like I said, 40 million Americans. Walk down a Target aisle. If you go to, you know, buy Calphalon and KitchenAid and George Foreman and Wilton and Sunbeam, GMMDL.com is our website.
Okay.
It was a great show. Happy to meet you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You can watch this episode and more on advisor.tv, stream us on the WGN Plus and Rivet Radio app, or download each episode on iTunes. And remember to stay connected by following us on Twitter at TBT on WGN. Boom. That's a wrap.
So I'm Don Bohr with 8-Bit Studios, and with me is...
Brett Mackey. I'm with 8-Bit Studios, too.
Yeah. Well, I'm a co-founder.
Yeah, so I'm a managing partner, so...
We're responsible individuals. So I want to talk a little bit about Ravine. I learned a ton about Teflon and about ceramic coating and the Teflon industry. I had no idea what anything.
See, and it was pretty interesting for me because, yeah, like as you know, Don, but I've been in the housewares industry worked in the housewares industry for almost 15 years. So that was all new information to me. Like it was
really.
I didn't know that there was that in that industry something like a component like Teflon was. That it was sold as a product to other companies,
right.
Like branded companies. I thought all that tech was owned by them.
Yeah, having in one place, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it was what I thought was especially cool. It was to me was the he was talking a little bit about the price point and like how it's kind of commoditized a little bit in the industry, and it struck a chord with me for anybody who provides like a service or a product to other industries or brands who, you know, generally are going to try and get the lowest price they can. But in his case, it was interesting because he was telling me that, you know, at any pan that you pick up, that Teflon coating that's on there is like 30 cents, you know, and he's like, and these guys are trying to drive down the price, but he said at the end of the day, after they buy that pan and they bring it home, like that's their first touch point, and it's going to be the first thing that they're going to kind of rate as far as the quality of the pan goes.
And the quality of the food, too.
And the quality of the food, and that breaks down. So it kind of like crossed industries for me because I hadn't really thought about it in the housewares industry with all my years of experience, but like in the manufacturing industry as a supplier of a product or a component, like the similarities to even in the tech industry. I mean, we run into it all the time where, you know, we're trying to give you the best presentation of your brand possible, and you want to drive the price down, well, just think about it for a second. And he's doing the same thing. And anyway, it was refreshing to hear that. And that was kind of my learning moment.
Yeah, what I loved about him is the I guess the raw innovation he's bringing into his space. You know, every time I think about manufacturing, I think about large businesses like that, I think of old guys in suits kind of just like moving manufacturing plants
around
the world.
Especially that industry.
Yeah, especially because it's like it's not very transparent.
Right.
It's behind the scenes. And so like seeing somebody that dynamic and that innovative, and you know, he was talking to us about hiring young PhDs out of universities for innovative purposes, because he says that the youth is the innovation point, and not he doesn't want to hire the old guys that are like, you know, set in their ways, the old engineers set in their ways. That was cool to hear.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the fact that it was a family business, and you kind of even see that torch handed off to you. So, and this guy's taking it to like a whole another level. I mean, it's Teflon. It's like, all right. Like,
well, I guess in this case, it's ceramic coating.
And
right?
Ceramic coating.
Infused ceramic coating.
It's the future. The future.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess coming up next, stay tuned. We're going to have Startup Institute on. Startup Institute's doing amazing things. They're a boot camp. And we at APS Studios have hired one of our awesome project managers out of Startup Institute, so we love everything they're doing.
Every single person I think we've met out of Startup Institute
they're awesome.
Is polished.
Yeah,
polished.
Yeah.
I think they produce polished people.
Yeah, they're great people. Yeah. And then Rob from Lisa App is going to be on, and we think he's about to change the beauty industry.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm a bald man, and I'm trying to think about, well, what am I going to get done
shaves.
Over there? I'm going to get some shaves.
Straight razor shave.
Straight razor shave. Yep. Straight to the dome.
All right.